to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I ever get back, so let's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
Bubble. Bubble.
Bubble.
And welcome to Let's Get To. I am your host, James Christopher, and we have a packed show for you today. In fact, I'm not even going to hang around in the opening for too long. We've got so much going on. We're going to talk to a former Marine who's now playing for the Colonels Collegiate League. We're talking to the Joliet Slammers. We've got folks from the CPBL here today. Scott's here to talk a little bit of controversy in Major League Baseball. And our good friends at Before the Pitch are here to talk a little bit about the expanded playoffs in Major League Baseball. So we have a lot to get to. But before we go, I want to do a shout out to the Vermont Lake Monsters. I am wearing the hockey sweater that they sent me at the beginning of what was supposed to be the minor league baseball season, because I want to do a shout out to Scott and Bailey and Jess and all my friends that are big hockey fans. The NHL is back, so I hope you guys can enjoy it, get a little bit of a break from the Rona, and just enjoy one of your favorite games. And so I wear this for you in solidarity. I am not a hockey fan, but as I said, my fandom is definitely for sale. So if you can convince me why I need to be a fan of your squad, just let me know. But like I said, we've got a packed show, so stick with us.
And now, the Big League Chew. And I on the majors.
Well, listen, we are back here on the Big League Chew with Scott. And Scott, I want to point out to the fans what I'm wearing. I've got my Vermont Lake Monsters hockey sweater because it's hockey's back. Go Blues.
And still, you're Stanley Cup champions.
You're Stanley Cup champions. Yeah, I'm going to watch some hockey this weekend. So, and I really am. I'm putting it out to everybody listening to the show. My fandom is for sale. You make a pitch and I will pick something. But you know,
the if you like champs, we got room on the bandwagon. That's all I'm saying.
Who was it that called you out on social media the other day about, well, it'll just be a bandwagon? And you're like, I don't care.
Yeah, hop on. Cool.
You gotta start somewhere.
And then somebody else was like, oh, well, yeah, you finally won one in 50 years. I'm like, yeah, and we're still it. And if you give us a couple of months, we might just win another.
Might just win another one. So speaking of bandwagons, we did not prep this episode. And you requested this topic. This easy could have been an Andy Tom Chesson topic. But I think it would have fallen on deaf ears because of us talking about it. You want to talk about member of the 2018 cheating Red Sox.
Thank you.
Joseph Kelly. So what do you got on your mind about Joe Kelly?
Joe Kelly is not the first time that he's thrown at somebody's head. And I'm just going to say, for a reliever in today's game to throw at someone's head is the most – I don't cuss on this show. I'm about to put the kids to bed. It's the most chicken shit thing a relief pitcher can possibly do. And people will say, well, that's been part of the game forever. No, horse crap. It's not been part of the game forever because the people, if I threw at your head, Jim, in the fourth inning, in the fifth inning, when I come to bat, guess what you're going to do? And they say, well, relief pitchers could have done it. Sure, but relief pitchers came in for 3 or 4 innings at a stretch back in the day when they weren't wearing helmets and it was okay. If you're throwing at my head, fine, you're about to get the exact same thing retaliated to you. But there is no retaliation available for Joe Kelly. And for a guy, I have never seen anything that a grown man sticks his tongue out at someone else in which it's a class act. And he's doing it on his way to the dugout while the guys who were actually there in 2017 and may have been offended by this came out to handle some. So Joe Kelly has absolutely zero respect for me. And this morning, after watching some ESPN, I got to say, man, Jessica Mendoza has even less respect for me because she's talking about, well, Joe Kelly wasn't even on the team, but he can feel what they're going through. And that's the sign of a good teammate. But he was a member of the Red Sox, like the only other team that has had anything called out on them in this cheating scandal were the Red Sox. And for people saying, well, you know what? The players should have been punished on the Astros. And if the players would have been punished, then this wouldn't be happening. The only reason you got the full story about the trash cans being banged was because they were given immunity. Okay. If a guy commits a crime, they're trying to get to a bigger scandal, what's going on, and the DA offers immunity to someone in order to get the full story. Did the guy do it? Yeah. Did he receive the full punishment of the law? No. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten the full story. This is not rocket surgery, man. And I am so over the people saying, kudos for Joe Kelly for he's a warrior. He's standing up for all of Major League Baseball. No, screw it, man. 21 game suspension is what this would have equated to in a regular season. And that's not enough. He's not a warrior. He's a guy. He's a headhunter. He's done it before. He did it in 2018. That's why
against the Yankees, who are now holding. I think two things about this gross me out. One, that very childish sticking the tongue out. You know what you do? You're badass if you get Carlos to swing and miss and you walk back to the dugout.
Because that's it. Like just walk back. The sticking or tip your cap tongue to out something. That's fine.
It's childish. And the idea that it's being held up as badass. And then you've got all these people talking about Carlos is the ultimate hold me back guy. Hey, man, I shared that sky view of it all. And all the Astros were at the Dodgers dugout. And yeah. Joe Kelly was behind a catcher in the dugout.
Exit stage right.
Yeah, the whole thing is gross. And let's also think about, you know, we now know it's a sensitive subject for old Astros fans because, you know, one of my favorite players as a kid was Dickie Thon. So I know what can happen when it's not intentional and someone gets hit in the head. And like, if you are someone who would want to risk death and permanent injury over something that no one that's smart believes just the Astros did, then you got to look inward at yourself because you're a piece of shit. So that's my thought.
I would agree with that. I also do want to actually commend Major League Baseball for not handing down a one game suspension or fining the guy $2,000 or something, but for giving him the 8-game suspension, because that's a message. That suspension is not just, okay, Joe Kelly, here's what it is. That's a two-prong thing. A, it's saying, Joe Kelly, you've done this before. We're not going to allow you to do it again. But B, and most importantly, it's a message to the rest of the league. Throw at these guys' heads and handle it this way, and you're going to find yourself with some time on the bench too, because I come back to it. You have to have your head in a hole deeper than Limu the Emu in the latest Liberty Mutual commercial. You have to have your head buried so far in the sand to think the Astros were the only team cheating in Major League Baseball. Yes, they were cheating. Yep, sure were. So were the Red Sox. So were anywhere that it looks like that Alex Cora or Carlos Beltran went. And they weren't the first ones to do it. They won't be the last ones to do it. And the only reason that it's still not happening is because the Astros players came forward and told the truth, because they knew they weren't going to get dinged for it. So they did tell the story. But think about that. That almost makes me wonder in a different way. If I want to look at this a completely different way and put on my tinfoil hat, are Major League Baseball players upset with the Astros because they blew the lid on this? And so they've taken away the opportunity for them to cheat. Was cheating happening so much that now the lid's blown and they can't do the same thing? They can't get the edge they were getting before? I don't know. I don't know. But I could make that argument. I don't know if it would hold much water because it's just now coming to my head, really. But I could do that. So why are Major League Baseball players so upset about this and so, you know, social justice for the Yankees and Dodgers? Give me a break, man.
I think a lot of them think that the investigation is going to stop with the Astros so they can sit on their soapbox and preach, knowing that they're not going to be any repercussions for them. And I think one of the things that they think is interesting, I read an interesting piece about the punishment of Joe Kelly, and it was essentially Manfred correcting a mistake that he made when he punished the Red Sox and the Yankees in 17. He didn't punish them harsh then. He therefore gave no incentive to not do it again, i.e. why the Astros kept doing it, versus now no one's going to throw at the Astros this year or anybody intentionally because you're going to lose 22% of your season or something.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. And you know what? Kudos to Dusty Baker too, because I mean he could have blown this off. He's getting a fine out of this. Are you kidding me? For Dusty Baker didn't do anything to warrant a fine.
I think he's getting on.
Let's also not take away the hard tags that were happening over on Bregman. Okay, that's the thing also about Joe Kelly that shows me intent at throwing at the head. I'm not so sure the slider he threw really got away that much, but you don't throw 2 feet behind somebody's head accidentally. You just don't. It just doesn't happen. But now I could see the slider coming out and coming out above the head if that was the only thing that had happened. And I don't think a spinner is going to end somebody's career. But 96 in an ear hole will absolutely do some damage to somebody. But he threw over to Bregman, threw over to first base 3 times, hard tag, right in the ribs. That's a message they were sending to Bregman. But you can do that and not get fined because you're doing that within the confines of the game and you got to be in the know to really see what's happening there. But then to turn around and the next pitch, put it in the back of his head. No.
Yeah. There's also some question of, did Kelly intentionally put his foot in the wrong side of the bag and Brantley stepped on it and did tweak his angle, which is why he was taken out of the game last night. The fact is that Kelly –
Joe Kelly's a smarmy little slimy thing. That's what I'm seeing out of it. Sticking his tongue out and wearing the little redneck Riviera douchebag glasses. Forget you, Joe Kelly. I got no use for you.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you took that take on. Real quick, what do you have to make of just the first 10% of the season's over? What do you make of the first 6 games? Anything surprising?
So I don't think, man, is there anything that can surprise us anymore? Right. Is there anything that really, there's talk of seven inning doubleheaders, which again, Jessica Mendoza thinks is a great idea because that's what they do in softball. And that's cool. I'm fed up with that reasoning because they're thinking about seven inning doubleheaders. And Jessica Mendoza's take this morning was that it's a good thing because bullpens aren't all that accurate. And 14 innings is a lot to play in one day. And somewhere Ernie Banks is screaming from heaven saying, please shut up. Anyway, so the 7-inning doubleheaders, that's a possibility, but I think that's because we're seeing so many games having to be delayed or postponed or canceled. Maybe an option because it's not like the Marlins are in the postseason anyway. But being held up, it was a big question whenever we had the preview show. What are they going to do when a road team catches the virus? Well, bang, right out of the gate, it's happened. And they're doing the best they can. There's not a lot you can do. You postpone games, you cancel games, you move games around, you schedule a doubleheader. You can play two in a day, so we're beneficial in that. To me, that's one part. Now, the actual game itself, frequently, and the Astros are benefiting from this right now, frequently young pitchers who the league doesn't really have a gauge on yet can come in and be really successful early on in the season, and that's happening. And so, and that's not just happening for, Nate Pearson had a great start for Toronto, a 5 scoreless inning, struck out his first batter that he sees in the bigs. Before they get a book on you, you can have a lot of success against hitters, but it also doesn't take long for them to get a book on you.
Right.
So you can get 2, 3, 4 starts out of somebody before they really catch on what the guy's all about. I think the Astros are the team taking the most advantage of that right now, but that's happening throughout baseball. It's good to watch games. We joke about the KBO a little bit, but they're back to 10% of people in stands with social distancing guidelines happening now. One of their teams didn't enforce the guidelines properly. Their ticketing wasn't situated. It was just kind of general admission. Everybody
right.
came into the same hole, and they were told, look, we're going to take everybody out of everybody's stands if you can't enforce the rules. And so, boom, straight out of the gate. So there is a way to get over this. We're seeing that, and it's nice to see the game played on the field again. And hopefully, we can get over the nonsense of throwing at people's heads, and we can just kind of work through crap, right, man? I mean, that's the, you
well,
know.
And
and the other thing that's fun too is when they don't have the crowd noise piped in, like happened with the Brewers and the Cubs over the weekend, and you can hear the guys chirping back and forth at each other. That lets you know in the game that these guys talk a lot and they say a lot of words that aren't allowed to air on network TV during the day.
You mean like Dusty Baker saying, "Get on the mound, fucker"? Well, that came through the broadcast. You know, man, I think
that could be one of them.
As we wrap up, though, like I think a seven, you and I love a seven inning doubleheader in indie ball.
Sure.
In minor league baseball.
Sure.
In collegiate summer league baseball. Yeah. I don't think that contracting pitching staffs for seven inning doubleheaders is going to make for very exciting baseball. What I do want to ask you as we wrap up, like take 30 seconds. Do you think with the way the Rona has exploded and everything, should they just keep the active roster at 30 players, or do you think
yes.
they should?
Yeah, no brainer.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
So we're excited to welcome to our Who's on First segment the general manager of the Joliet Slammers, Heather Mills. Heather, how's it going today?
Great. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. It's actually under 95 degrees in Austin, Texas today, which is in 2020 with COVID, that's the way we measure success.
There you go.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into baseball in the first place? Like some of your first memories, even liking the game to now being the GM of the Slammers.
Sure. So I always enjoyed playing sports as a kid. I was lucky. My dad always got off work at like 3:30 in the afternoon. So he'd come home, you know, spring, summer, fall, and we'd spend, you know, the couple hours before dinner every night, you know, kicking a soccer ball, throwing a football, you know, playing wiffle ball, everything. I'm from a very small town, so not a lot of opportunities when it comes to actual team sports. So I didn't ever really play too many team sports. But when I think I was 12, I went to my first major league game. So I grew up in Southern Illinois, my entire family, St. Louis Cardinal fans. And I took a trip to Chicago with my Girl Scout troop and fell in love with the Cubs. I can tell you it was June 19th, 1998. Sosa hit two out. Cubs lost to the Phillies in 12. And I was hooked. So that was kind of the first, you know, love of the game. As I got into high school, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my career, knew I wanted to go to college, but not really sure what I wanted to do, and realized that sport management was an option and I could actually work in baseball. Had always thought I'd work on the major league side, but ended up doing an internship with the Memphis Redbirds, the Cardinals AAA affiliate, as my last year in college, 09. So spent the entire year with them. They won the PCL, which was great. And from that time on, I decided that minor league baseball was the way I wanted to go. So then went to the Kane County Cougars, again up here near Chicago, spent a couple years there, got out of baseball for a short time frame, was kind of burnt out on the hours and, you know, a few other things. And then the Joliet Slammers were going through a sale. Love living in the Chicago area. I'm not too far away, you know, from my family. Down in Southern Illinois. And so I reached out to the ownership group that was buying the team, started, you know, as box office manager in December of 2012. And I've been here ever since, moved my way up to assistant GM after a couple of years. And then I think this is my fifth year as GM. It all kinds of runs together after a while.
I bet it does. And at least now that you're in independent ball, you can resume your Cubs fandom.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Not too far away. I can take the train. It's right across the street from the stadium here in Joliet. Hop on the train in a normal year. Take it downtown Chicago, hop on the Red Line, and I can be at Wrigley, you know, pretty quick.
So I pretty much grew up in the Astrodome. So there was a lot of like that 98, like, you know, the Astros won, 107 games, and nobody talks about it because of Sammy and Mark. It's, you know, the lack of respect is always part of our identity as fans. So let's talk a little bit about the Slammers then. So, you know, in a normal year, what does that team mean to that community?
Sure. So we're the only professional team in our county. You know, obviously we're close to the Cubs and the White Sox. You know, there's numerous other independent and affiliated teams in the area. So minor league baseball is really big in this area. We do a lot in our community. We have a lot of fundraising programs with schools and local nonprofits. You know, we get our players out to different camps. We have day camp days. We invite schools out. So, you know, we're a big part of the community, and the community is very important to us. So at the start of this year, it was, you know, really difficult not having those connections when you're so used to having those with all of the people. I like to say that's the best part about minor league baseball, is those relationships you build over time. And it's been really difficult, you know, when we weren't playing, to not be able to see those normal faces and to see all the people that you're used to seeing every summer.
One of the things that I wanted to ask too is, you know, as an independent GM, you have a little bit different job than an affiliated minor league baseball GM, because you actually have to get players and stuff like that. How was that in this season, as we talk about the pod that you guys ended up making?
Yeah. So usually it's the field manager that does most of the recruiting in independent baseball. This year, it's again a unique situation. So our VP of sales and marketing actually was the one that was really pushing to sign players, you know, for this pod, instead of, you know, 24 man roster. We're carrying, I think, like 110 guys right now amongst the four teams. So it's hard enough to find, you know, 24 guys some years. And then we thought, you know, it'd be a crazy idea to try and do that, you know, with four teams.
So let's talk about that process then. You know, obviously, I think there's a give and take here, where we need some kind of break from COVID from a fan perspective. And then on the other hand, the Slammers can't do a fanless league. The Frontier League can't go fanless like the MLB is trying to do. So where did that decision of putting together essentially these additional teams come from, and how's it gone so far?
Yeah. So, you know, we were meeting weekly with our league. The GMs would meet, the owners would meet, you know, there were some sort of meeting almost every day in our league, you know, starting back probably in early April, just trying to figure out what our options were, if we were going to be able to play. As we hit June, it looked like, you know, more and more likely that there was going to be some sort of suspension of the season. So early to mid-June, we started kind of tossing around ideas. At that time, Illinois was still very restrictive. We didn't know, you know, if we were going to be able to do anything with fans. And about the time that it really looked like the league was going to suspend the season, you know, we were talking with state officials, and it looked like maybe we were going to be able to open with some sort of fans in the stadium. So then we started thinking about what we could do. You know, looked at other local teams. You know, we ran probably 20 or 30 different scenarios of things we could do. Even looking at running two teams out of here, but decided that, you know, wasn't very exciting for the fans. So we finally decided we could field four teams ourselves, play them all out of our stadium downtown Joliet, you know, and started signing players as soon as the Frontier League suspended. So I think in about 21 days, we pulled off we built a 54 game schedule, signed 100 and some players, and started playing.
That's nuts. So let's go through the identities then. You know, so we have the Joliet Slammers, which obviously refers to the prison. And I think it's a fun, unique brand. You guys get any pushback on that?
So I wasn't here when they branded the team. You know, we'd had a professional team here before the Slammers. The Jackhammers were here since the early 2000s. At that time, the prison was kind of a, you know, touchy subject. In the time since, the prison has reopened for people to tour it. There's, you know, a big push to restore it to some level of, you know, tourist activity. And Joliet's kind of embraced that identity. It's what everybody knows Joliet for. And I think Joliet's finally just decided, you know what, you know, we're just going to embrace it. And so I think most people, you know, really like our branding, you know, in our primary logo, we have some, you know, little pieces, there's a guard tower, some things like that. And I think when people notice that, they really get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite looks, actually. As I'm figuring out who comes on the show, that's a big part of it. You know, there is a book and a cover situation. But you guys have some fun other brands. So let's go through those. So let's start with, well, you just start with whichever one you want to go through.
Yeah, well, I'm watching the Tully Monsters right now take BP on the field. So we'll start with them. That is the state fossil of Illinois. Was found in a creek bed not too far south of here. not that long ago. I like to consider myself a little bit of a nerd, or a lot of bit of a nerd. So I knew what the state fossil was. So when we were, you know, brainstorming names, I thought, well, that's cool. Nobody really knows what it looks like. You know, we can have some fun with the branding. So we did that. And then turns out that the Tully Monsters manager is Scott Spezio of Cardinal and Angel fame. He grew up down the road from Joliet. So he actually knew what a Tully Monster was as well. So that's how he got to be the manager of the Tully Monsters.
I love that. And then let's talk about is it the Nerd Herd?
We have the Nerds Herd. So Ferrara Candy Company owns the Nerds brand. And so they are actually sponsoring that team. And it turned out to be a really cute logo. I cannot keep their hats and shirts in stock in the team store. They go like crazy.
You might have to put something aside for when we get up there, because as you can see from behind me, I'm a big gear guy. So, and then your final look is the deep dish pizza.
Yes. So obviously Chicago is well known for deep dish. So we thought we'd tie that in as well. And the manager of that team has Chicago ties. It's Glenn Allen Hill, most well known,
wow,
likely for the rooftop shot. But he's managing, and his son, Glenn Allen Jr., is playing on his team as well.
Oh, love that. That is so cool. It's, you know, down here in Sugarland, we've been covering the Constellation League, which is a very similar idea. And Roger Clemens is managing a team with his kids on it. I kind of love that connection. So we got a few weeks left in the season. What can we expect? You know, I'll be up there in a couple of weeks. What can I expect as a fan when I get out to the ballgame?
Sure. So unlike most years, we've kind of pulled back on the promotional side. You know, usually minor league baseball is known for those zany promotions, the different theme nights. We are only at 20% capacity of our stadium. So we really decided to focus on the baseball. We've got some amazing talent, you know, a mix of independent guys. We have guys that are currently under contract with affiliated teams that are essentially on loan to us. Major League Baseball allowed teams to do that, so these guys, you know, wouldn't miss a year. And we've got a couple former big leaguers too. Ian Kroll is throwing for the Nerds. Dietrich Enns throws for the Tully Monsters. So a couple guys that have some good, you know, big league experience under their belt. So it is really great baseball. You know, we're doing everything as safe as we can. People are socially distanced, so it's like every other row. Cleaning those frequently touched surfaces. Our concessions is completely touchless. You order on your phone, you get a text message and go pick it up whenever it's ready.
Oh, wow. That's the first, y'all are the first we've heard of that's doing that. That's a great touch.
Yeah. And we weren't, you know, it was one of those things. We're not sure how we're going to pull it off until a few days before. But it seems to be working great. The fans love it. You know, it's a little bit different. You don't have that same crowd noise. Obviously at a smaller level of fans that are allowed in, they can't get the autographs, or, you know, kids can't run the bases like they normally do. But our main goal is the safety of our players and our fans. So that, you know, I think everybody understands on both sides, you know, what's necessary to keep everybody safe.
So I guess my wrap up question then is, let's assume, although should we assume anymore, that 2021, we're able to pull it off like normal. What are some things that you're learning or things that you're going to take from this season into the next? And I got to think one of those things is being one of the only teams playing, people are going to know who you are that maybe didn't before.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm in charge of all of our merchandise. One of the many hats I wear is the GM. and I have shipped stuff all over the country with the new teams, you know, with some of the Slammer stuff. We're streaming for the first time in several years our games online. So people are, you know, seeing what we have to offer. We have a beautiful ballpark that the city of Joliet owns that we play in. And now we also have all these connections that we didn't have before with major league teams and players, you know, that we hope to maybe have some of these guys playing for the Slammers next year that we might not have ever, you know, had the chance to. So we're hoping this ups our baseball game down the road as well as getting more people to know about us.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview, brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
So we are excited to welcome to our On Deck segment, our interview of the episode, Anthony Silkwood, who is a pitcher in the temporarily organized Colonels Collegiate League and former Marine. How's it going, man?
Not too bad. How you doing? I'm doing good. Look, I'm ex-Army. I know you guys use former Marine, right? Like no such thing as an right. ex-Marine. Yeah, all my buddies like, I get it. Dude, tell me a little bit about yourself starting out. Like, how did you first find out that you wanted to play baseball?
So we did a thing. It was like an event back when I was in. It was probably year four when I was in, and my chaplain put it together, and I thought it was a free trip to go watch a baseball game. It was called Home Runs for Heroes, and it was High Point University hosted it, and they brought in about eight of us Marines, and we got to go there and hit BP in front of the people before their game, and got to eat with it, got to watch the game, got to meet the players, and I'm like watching, and I'm like, I want to play again. And it's like, I got to go down there. They had a radar gun. I was like 83, 84. I was like, yep, I'm going to get out. I'm going to go play baseball. So it's like, I basically didn't touch it at all for 4 years. And then now I decided I want to play.
So that's kind of, so you, obviously you grew up baseball fan. Who was your team as a kid?
St. Louis Cardinals. My dad played in the organization back in the 80s. So it was really easy to pick them up.
It's funny, man. I grew up, obviously they're in the American League now, but I'm an Astros guy. And I always like had this like respect for the Cardinals, but still hate the Cubs, man.
No, absolutely.
I might hate the Cubs more than ISIS. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, they were so bad for so long. They became irrelevant when I was a kid. And it was like, you know, and then the teams we started hating, you know, were a lot better. Like the Brewers, we started hating the Brewers. And
yeah,
now the Cubs are relevant again. So there we go.
Yeah, I guess so. So you end up in the Marines, and like I said, you didn't touch it. So tell me a little about your career, man. Deployments, how many did you have? How long were you gone?
So I did 5 years active duty. So I was based out of Cambridge, North Carolina. 2014, 2015, I was deployed to the Middle East. We were over there in the Arabian Peninsula. Just things were very different. Did a lot of training with foreign nationals, did a lot of stuff like that. Did a lot of gator squares, means we were just kind of cruising around in the ocean. You know, that was when ISIS started kind of hitting some of our places. So we were there just in case for evacuations and stuff like that. It was a great experience. Got to work with some awesome interpreters from, one was from Saudi Arabia, the other was from Oman area. And it was an absolute blast. Definitely changed my opinion on a lot of things over there. And did that, got out as a tank. I was a tank commander.
Okay.
So we operated the M1A1s, and the Marine Corps actually just disbanded them from having tanks in the United States Marine Corps. Now it's going to be all the Army has tanks. So it's a real touchy subject being a tanker now that they kind of disbanded it entirely of the Marines.
What a very interesting tactical decision. I don't understand.
Like completely got rid of them.
Yeah. I don't get that at all, but that's wow. I really didn't know that. I usually keep my finger tighter on the pulse than that. One of the things I thought was really cool about your story when I first read it, you know, like I did 7 years Army. I was a 13 Fox, which is a forward reserve. I don't know what they call it in the Marines.
Yes. FO.
All right. Same thing. So, always wanted to go into film, went back into film. So, but I don't know if I would have done that if I hadn't been for like my wife being like, look, you put 7 years in, you have a chance to chase a dream. How much of that was for you? Like saying, look, I did my time. I get to now do something that I want to do.
That is something that I can't believe you just said that. So like, my dad is why I'm playing baseball still. You know, there was, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, I have to get my college degree. That was important to me. I want to play baseball. So it's like, okay, while I'm in school, I might as well play baseball instead of working, you know, a part-time job, you know, doing that. So I was like, I might as well play and enjoy it. And then, you know, at 25, when I had to get Tommy John surgery, my dad and I had a conversation. I was like, what am I doing? Like, you know, I'm 25. I don't have a career field. Like, do I need to start doing it? And he was like, you still got to go to school. So why not still play? And it's like, for sure. Like you think about it, and society, I'm not sure how it was for you, but society, all they see is like, well, this guy's 27 years old. You're still in college. Oh, okay. You must be college kid. And I'm like, okay, like that bothers you. Then don't talk to me. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know what to tell you. You know, when I was the normal college age, I wasn't in college. So I was doing something bigger than that. And, you know, it's definitely interesting. You know, it's definitely interesting.
It was that experience. I was the 28-year-old freshman. I remember, and this is a tangent, but one of my very best friends who we didn't serve together, but he was in the Air Force. And I got stuck in this like political economics class at UT. I'm a 28-year-old freshman. And he was an ROTC cadet, and he was going off about something. And I just said like, well, that's a super good way to get soldiers killed. And everybody looked around. And then at the end of the class, I walked out. He's like, "How long were you in for?" And I think that was this moment for me where people don't get that. Yeah, like while they were at keg parties and frat parties, you were keeping us safe, and it is a different reality.
Right. And it's just like, you know, and everybody has their own story. And like, I respect, you know, even if it wasn't in the military, it's like, okay, you're in college now. So like, that's all that matters. And it's just, society is really weird about it. And like, I'm sure like you said, you dealt with it too. And it's just different.
So, playing in the Colonel League, obviously baseball is this weird game. There are ups, there are downs. How much of your previous service, having been a Marine and seen real stuff, has helping you weather the kind of ups and downs of a natural baseball season, like having a college season get cut short because of COVID, then there's no baseball, now you have baseball again?
Right. So, you know, the biggest thing that I learned from the military was to control on, you can't worry about things you can't control. And I've said it year after year, and everybody I talk to, like, you can't worry about things you can't control. You know, that's, you know, the hurry up and wait. Yeah, couldn't control that. It's just, you just did it. The you know, when, you know, COVID happens and the whole season shuts down, it's like, okay, like, what do you want me to do about it? There's no reason of getting upset about it. I can't do anything about it. So, you know, I think the mentality aspect of it is for sure helped me out a lot, because I mean, from my time in the military, we were always, it seemed like we were always set up for failure. And like, they do that, and they always did it. It's like, we'd be on a tank mission and practicing for our field ops, and we would have like two tanks. And then next thing you know, they're having us mimic, you know, 14 Russian T-72s. I'm like, wait, well, I'm not going to base 14 tanks. Like, like, do we not have air support? Like, so it's like, they set you up for failure. And it's like, I come out of the tank and I'm pissed off. And then they're like, you know, and that's when Staff Sergeant Ward talked to me, and he was just like, man, you get worked up. He's like, you can't worry about things you can't control. He's like, they don't want us to win. If we won everything, we wouldn't be training. And it's like, I just take that process to baseball. And it's just like, you know, what happens happens. And that's why you can't, you know, guys get on base, you can't start freaking out and stuff like that. I mean, you see that a lot. So I think mentality for sure has been the biggest thing that I've taken from the military to playing.
So what was it like for you then, you know, playing college ball, you're back, you're chasing that dream, and then you're shut down. But then finding out about the Colonel League, how'd you find out about it? And what was that experience like, knowing that you're going to get to pick it back up again for this season?
Right. So, you know, I'm very temporary in the Colonel's League right now, obviously, you know, very limited action. But I found out because Coach David Garcia and Coach John Goble, they're both influenced my career very much. They're both head coaches in the league. You know, Mike Brown runs the league, and I'm close with him as well from last year. So it's a very close knit group, and it has a lot of potential to be something pretty cool in the future. But yeah, so my pitching coach, or my head coach at Parkland, is a head coach in the Colonel's League, as well as Coach Garcia is a head coach in the Colonel's League. So I just had to pick between which team I wanted to play for, and they kind of bickered about that, but it was all good fun.
We actually were up there for July 4th weekend. My wife and I, for our show, we went up there. And my first time in Normal, my first time dealing with even that kind of ball. And I thought it was just an incredible experience. Of course, it's 4th of July. What better place to be than at a ballpark?
Right.
And the Star Wars jerseys were sweet the night before. But what part of it, like you're obviously, you're working toward a goal. But how important is it, do you think, for us, like as spectators, to have a little bit of normalcy in the form of baseball back,
as far as like with everything going on?
Yeah, you know, just it's all weird, we're all dealing with COVID and there's protest, all this stuff that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think sports have always been a nice little escape and everything like that. And you know, each person handles things differently, but it's like I feel like when I've always wanted to get away and do something, it's I've gotten tickets to a ball game, or I watched this, or I watched that. I think, you know, it helps fans out too. It gives them a place to go and do something, you know, and it's like nobody forced them to go to those games, you know? So it's like when the fans were there and it was just, they were watching the fireworks and watching the game, it just seemed like you look around and it's like, everybody's enjoying themselves. And it's like, for the first time all summer, you get a group of people, it looks like they're actually having fun at a game. And it's a lot of fun to play in. I think, you know, one day I handed out like 60 hot dogs, and I started handing them out during the game. So it's like, it's just a lot of fun. It's absolutely about the fans at the Colonels League, and that's what makes it pretty cool.
Yeah, I wanted to ask too, because you guys are basically playing a 4-team round robin. Is it get a little chippy with you guys now that you're knowing your opponent so well? Is it kind of getting fun that way?
No, I don't think so. I think it does get chippy, but it's more of everybody knows each other, and that's the coolest thing about this whole thing. Is we're all around each other all the time. Everybody's talking crap to each other. It's an absolute blast. I'm never quiet during a game. I've missed a lot of days just because I've prior, commitments and stuff like that. But like when I'm there, I'm always saying something. But yeah, the guys have an absolute blast with it. I don't think there has been any altercations really, or any kind of argument towards them. Now we get chippy with the umpires. That's for sure. Same umpires. That's that. We get the same umpires every week. So it's one of those things too.
So, let's move past this. Like 2021, you're back pitching for school. You're going to keep progressing. Have y'all had any indication of what that season's going to look like, or is it still too early to tell?
Yeah. As of now, we're going to have a 2021 season in 2020 fall. I'm going to go down to Louisville here in the next couple of weeks. And that's all. I mean, that's all we know is right now. And it's like, until we get told anything else, we're just kind of preparing for that. I mean, I'm hoping with everything going on that everything goes as scheduled, but everything's up in the air. If you told me 2 years ago that entire season would make it canceled, I told you you're a liar. So it's like, it's just up in the air. I mean, I just kind of do what we can, and what happens happens.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm so thankful for you guys because, we do this show. I had like 50 trips planned. All of them got canceled. My wife had given me, for the first time ever, I was going to spring training 2 days before we left, shut down. So getting up to the Colonels League was a blast.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can imagine.
As a Cardinals fan, real quick, we're looking at a 60 game MLB season. Weird. Should we be playing? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, the whole show, what should we do? What we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing. I have no idea. I don't even know what this is. I don't know if 4 years from now, if things are going to come back. I have no idea. All I know is as long as people are safe and people don't lose their lives, I'm okay with doing whatever it is we're doing. I mean, obviously, it's easy for me to say I'm young. Well, college kids are a lot younger than me. I'm getting close to the age where it's going to be like, okay, I'm going to start getting a little more if I get it. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. Like at the end of the day, it's like baseball to me isn't more important than someone else's life. If somebody comes to the game, they have something they don't know about. And it's just one of those things. It's like, I have no idea. But if we do, if we continue, I hope it's just safe, and hope everybody has fun doing it, enjoying the games, and especially the players too. I know that's a big thing too. You're talking about million-dollar athletes, potentially, risking. Everybody's like, well, they get paid millions. So yeah, well, we don't know what this is like.
Right.
We've never experienced this before. And it's just like, how vulnerable do they need to make themselves? So it's, I just hope everybody's being safe with it. And, the Cardinals, if they don't figure out something in the outfield, they should probably just cancel the season. So, I mean, I don't know. We got to figure that out.
I became a big proponent of canceling the season when Verlander said he was going to be out for the season. You know what? Shut it down. I don't even
care. Yeah, just, maybe this is not the best. And then you got Kluber too. And it's like, let's just, let's take a step back here and check it out. I mean, I don't know if you watched the Cardinals play. Our outfield is horrendous.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah, I've become the co-creator of this show's big Cardinals guy. I went to Busch Stadium for the first time last year. It was amazing. So I've kind of become a National League Cardinals fan, as they say.
Yeah. I mean, my dad made me – I do not like Dexter Fowler. I've been open about that on Twitter for the past, 3 years. The day he signed, I said it was a mistake. I was a huge John Jay fan. And we paid Dexter Fowler like $83.4 million more. And John Jay had better statistics and he was a better player. I can't stand Dexter Fowler. That's just me. I don't know. I got into one of the Cardinals pitching coordinators about probably 8 months ago talking about it. I kept saying, I will strike Dexter Fowler out. I kept saying it. And it's like, I'm telling you, hey, so everybody kind of has fun with me about that. And then, the first year we have a DH, our best hitter leaves. Yeah. We get rid of our best hitter because he needed to go to a place with the DH. And then now, guess what?
Now there's a DH.
Right.
Well, You know, I think you should strike him out and they ought to give you a slot. I think that right. should be like even trade. Yeah.
No, that's, yeah, I'm telling you. It's just a shout out on Twitter. Just say, I will stop switch hitting if I'm batting .130 from both sides. That's all I need.
Man, Anthony, this has been great. So tell us a little bit again, like how many more years you get left in school, and then when, you know, what's it look like for you for the future?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm beyond.
Oh, look at that catch, though.
I'm beyond excited for Louisville. It was, you want to talk about one of the most welcoming things when hundreds of people tweeted you and they said they can't wait to meet you, they can't wait to see you. And it's like, I haven't even done anything. I haven't even thrown a pitch for Louisville and people are excited to see me. You know, it's one of those things, like, it was the most welcoming thing ever. So, you know, I'm in no rush to get out of there, but I'm also to the point now where I'm 27 and I'm going to turn 28. And it's like, I got to get a job eventually. Like, I have to start. I got to get a big boy job. So it's like, and, you know, it's one of those things I kind of look at. But at the end of the day, I'll graduate next summer. I have 2 years of eligibility left. So if I graduate next summer, I can come back for a graduate degree and play, which is something I very well might do. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I want to play pro ball. I think that the door is going to be open, especially going to Louisville and the things that they have to offer and how good they are and what they do to pitchers. I mean, they do something special. They had 2 first-rounders this year, for God's sakes. Like,
right.
There's a lot of special things. And Luke Smith's my buddy here. He went to the same junior college as me. Just missed him by a year. He's coming back. All those guys, Adam Elliott's coming back. Kieran's coming back. Like, all those guys, they lost 2 pitchers and they to the first round of the draft and everybody's coming back. And it seems like after talking with a lot of them and looking at them and watching them, everyone's got a chip on their shoulder, which is how I play. And like, so I'm absolutely just going to look forward to this year and try to do the best I can and contribute as much as I can on and off the field. And then, you know, afterwards, you know, I very well might be like, okay, they're going to sign you a pro deal or you suck. It's time for you to go. And it's like either one, it's like, I tried my best. And then if it's time, whenever my time's done playing, I'm for sure going to get into coaching. That's something that, you know, being around, heck, even from the Army time, I'm sure you remember, you know, being around, you know, good leaders and bad leaders and good coaches and bad coaches. I've learned so much from bad leaders and bad coaches that I feel like it's my time to stick around and kind of do things the way I think they should be done and kind of turn some pages a little bit and kind of change it a little bit. Stick around enough to change it.
I absolutely love that answer. I completely agree. I think leadership matters and bad leadership is worse than good leadership is good. Anthony, thank you so much for being on Let's Get To. Thank you for your service. And we can't wait to keep following you and hopefully have you back on the show a little later on.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup.
We're going to talk to Daniel Shee, who he and I have a weird connection. Daniel, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So the weird connection, I think I told you, is I am a graduate of the University of Texas Film Department, and you are currently a student.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm a rising senior at the UT Austin RTF department. I'm an RTF major, so I guess that is our weird connection there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty neat. So tell me a little bit about kind of what you're doing for the CPBL.
Yeah, so I am currently helping them manage their Twitter account. They, you know, being the first baseball league to start their season, the CPBL was getting a lot of overseas fans like you and a lot of some American fans as well. So they want to expand on their Twitter presence, especially English speaking content wise. So they're looking for people and I applied and I got the job.
Very cool. Are you a baseball fan naturally? And so this was just fun or just, it was just a good gig for you?
Yeah. So I started watching baseball since 2008. When back then, Chan-Ming Wong for the Yankees, he is Taiwanese. He won 19 games in 2 straight years. And so that was when a lot of people like me started watching baseball. That's also when I got introduced to the CPBL, which is the only pro league, baseball pro league here. There was 1 year back in like 2007 that I actually went to a baseball summer camp with of the Lanu Bears, which is the former team of the Lamigo Monkeys, which is now a former team of the Rakuten Monkeys. So so I kind of just followed that thread and sort of started following the Monkeys all the way since 2007. And it's not like I've been watching every single game, but right. I mean, I've been loosely following. I used to be a little bit more of an MLB fan than I am an SPPL fan. But obviously this year, because of the virus, watched a lot of CPBL games. And I actually haven't seen a minute of the MLB games yet.
How cool has it been then for you? And it's kind of neat because my brother actually lives in Taiwan. He's a Brothers fan. He used to go to those games back in the day. But how cool has it been then to kind of help be that bridge to give baseball, not just to Taiwan, but to the whole world? Because you're exactly right. People were waking up early in the morning. You know, I was watching the Monkeys, the Guardians. My buddy still watches every Guardians game. How cool was it to be part of that bridge?
I mean, obviously it's a sort of surreal moment, you know. I mean, as a huge baseball fan, never thought I could be the guy promoting Taiwan baseball to the world. And to be honest, it's an opportunity that a lot of people like me never saw, never, you know, envisioned until like the opening day of this year, when there were a lot of reporting, a lot of news articles about CPBL in America, from the New York Times to CNN and stuff like that. In a way, it's a dream come true. Obviously, I haven't graduated yet, so I'm super young, and so there are a lot of things out there for me to experience. But I mean, right now is probably the coolest thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, and I'm really so appreciative. I wanted to get your take then because, you know, I don't know how much you're following, and we're recording this a little bit early before the episode comes out, but right now Major League Baseball is really at a crossroads because two games were canceled.
Right.
What is it that Major League Baseball is doing wrong compared to what the CPBL has done, where they've gone to the point where they're having fans now?
To be honest, I don't think it's an MLB thing any more than it's an American thing. The MLB, first of all, I'm not blaming the MLB for not having a bubble, because it is harder to have a bubble for baseball than it is for if you compare it to basketball. However, the day that the CPBL started, there were three cases that day in Taiwan. Even until right now, there are less than 500 cases. I think UT Austin alone has about the same amount of cases as there are in Taiwan. Even though UT Austin have about 60,000 people, you know, including student staff, professors, whatever. Taiwan has 23 million, the MLB, when the CBPL was starting, our CDC was adamant in saying, you know, if you have one person that got the coronavirus, doesn't matter if it's team personnel, the league personnel, the broadcaster, the ushers, or somebody that's associated with the game, they never like said it dead on, but it was assumed that if one person that's associated with the league, including also the future series, which is the minor league games, everybody there, if one person is affected, the whole league will shut down.
Right.
It's almost, you know, Ken Rosenthal wrote a story before they diagnosed 14 cases, saying that they played baseball the day that they had four cases. It's just remarkable to me. When Juan Soto was diagnosed with the virus, that was before the Yankees played the Nationals on opening day. and they still decided to play that game. And to me, I was like, how is this happening? How can you guarantee that none of the players who are practicing with Soto for 2 weeks at DC never was in close contact with Soto, and now because Soto is diagnosed, you're sending those players to play with the Yankees. And if they infect somebody with the Yankees are playing somebody else, or they should be playing somebody else. And it was crazy to me how people were being diagnosed and the games are still going on.
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's absolute insanity. And the idea that they let the Marlins decide amongst themselves, like, why was there no league person saying, no, there's a bigger fish to fry. And I also agree with you about the pod, particularly, well, I guess I disagree and agree, particularly at the beginning when they were talking about 140 games, okay, no pod. But maybe 60, you probably could have done a pod. I mean, if they really wanted to. So let's talk a little bit about you then. So first of all, what have you heard from UT as far as when you can get back on campus? Have they talked about that yet? Do they have a plan?
Yeah, so I could go back to campus whenever. A few weeks ago, there was Trump administration sent out something that, like, if you're taking all online classes, you're not allowed to come back.
Yeah.
They rescinded that because Harvard and MIT, you know, took them down, basically. Like,
good.
They sued them. However, you know, I am leaning towards not going back, and I'm trying to confirm that I can do that without a lot of setbacks in the future.
Sure.
Because I am a rising senior, and sports in the US is a lot more developed, and there's a lot more money obviously in sports. Wanting to do sports media, I think I will have my plan was to stay in the US as long as I can. I don't have a green card, nor do I have citizenship. So, it was going to be hard for me to stay in the US permanently. But my plan was to stay there as long as I can. And part of that is starts next semester, my last semester at UT. So, I wanted to make sure that, you know, that part of, you know, staying in the US after college was not going to be a setback if I stayed in Taiwan for this semester. So I'm still confirming, going through that process right now. However, you know, it's looking better every day, you know, getting confirmation from the international office and the professors and the advisors from Moody College that, you know, it is possible and stuff like that. So I could go back, but so far it doesn't look like I'll be going back yet.
Would you be graduating in December or May?
May.
Well, I hope you can get back at least for the campus-wide graduation, Daniel, because it's awesome. And so afterwards, you want to go into sports media. Is that your goal?
Yeah, that is my goal.
Perfect. Well, when you get back to Austin, let me know, and I'll get you dinner, and we'll meet in person. Does that sound good?
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much.
All right, Daniel, thanks so much for being on the show. Hook 'em, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hook 'em horns.
So this is the very first edition of Before the Deuce. This is our opportunity to bring on our favorite baseball people. We've got Scotty from Before the Pitch on, and you're wearing your Let's Get Two t-shirt. I love pandering more than anything. You've got your Murderers Row 27 Yankees hat on. I'm rocking I thought you would appreciate this, my Vermont Expos replica jersey. I'm trying to figure out which way to turn so you can see it better. There we go. Awkward as it is. Yeah. They were the last team to wear the Expos name.
Were they really?
They were. Yeah, I think they went for 2 years after Montreal became the Nationals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And when did they officially change the name to the Lake Monsters?
Shortly after the big move. And so one of the cool things they did, I earlier in an earlier segment, I wore my Vermont Lake Monsters hockey sweater because it's hockey season now. Okay. But they basically, when you were buying stuff, they would just slip in what was supposed to be a giveaway since they can't play.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Speaking
of slipped in, and this is the reason why you are with us today on what will become every couple of weeks having you on. They really slipped this expanded playoff. They just kind of like talk about a news dump and then Joe Kelly threw maybe at a guy and like nobody's talking about playoffs anymore. What are your thoughts of this 16 game playoff?
Oh God. I have to separate this into kind of two parts, the concept of expansion itself and then the specific plan that they did. The concept of expansion, I think is something I'm all for. And Billy agrees with that too. And the reason why is because baseball has the smallest playoffs of all like the four major sports. Right. And the thing that people don't understand is the more teams that can be playoff teams, there's more playoff money and more cities can get excited. And you get more people involved. It's all about taking the casual fan and making sure the casual fan gets more involved. I think baseball has a problem where we have this big separation of this sort of diehard elitist fan base who doesn't want anything to do with the casual people. But the thing is, the casual people, they're all watching football. They're watching hockey. Some of them are watching basketball. But and fantasy football really will tell you all you need to know about the value of casual people. We don't really do that. So the idea of expanding the playoffs, I think it's great. More people get involved, more money gets flowing, more people like it, more cities get involved, and that's how the sport gets bigger. Ideally, you expand the playoffs when you expand all of Major League Baseball, and we have a whole video series about how we would absolutely do that, which we should post something below on that. As far as the specific plan, I understand 16 teams this year, and the reason why I say that is because it's compensating for the fact that there's no second half resurgences by some teams. The Nationals were not good the first half. They were good the second half. So the fact that there is no second half to kind of make up time for, it's kind of fair to me to say, okay, so we'll let more teams in to compensate for that. I would not advocate for 16 teams moving forward. I think a good number right now is 14. Because if you put it down to 14 teams, then I think Billy looked up the whole thing. If you did 14 teams, only two teams in the last 10 years with sub 75 wins would get in the playoffs. Is there a sub 75 or a sub 500? I can't remember what it was, but Billy looked it up, whatever threshold he had. I wish I remembered what it was. Only two teams in 10 years. And Billy admitted, he's like, you know, for two teams in 10 years, I'll cut my losses with that. My biggest issue, and Billy also agrees with this, is there's not enough reward for winning the division. What should make sense to me is if you're going to have all these teams, the more you win, the more you're going to get rewarded.
Right.
And it should be that if you win the division, you get your first round bye. But that's not the case. If you say the division winners all got their first round byes and everybody else still has to play, I think that's fair because the higher up you win, the more of a reward you're getting. I do not think there's enough of a reward for winning divisions. That's the only critique that I have.
Yeah, especially where, and particularly when we transition this to a full 162 game season, you know, like tradition in the last couple of years, the only thing that could happen to Yankees, Dodgers, or Astros is they would be hurt by this. There's almost no upside for them. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I know you and I talk back and forth, I know that you're a reality TV show. I know your girlfriend is, right? A reality TV show fan. Yeah. What do you think of the reality TV show element to this of getting to pick who you play?
If you do that, you have to go balls to the walls and make an actual production about it. You can't just be like, you can't just be an announcement on Twitter. Like if you're choosing, it can't just be like Brian Cashman goes on Twitter and tweets, yeah, we'll play, I don't know, the Orioles. I'm just throwing that out there.
Right.
You have to make it like almost like The Bachelor where you have to have, you gotta have, what's his name? Eric Burns. I think he's the dude on MLB to do it. Kind of stand there. And then you got to have each GM kind of walk up and then you like, then they walk up with like a rose or a baseball or a glove or something. And then you give it to the GM of the team that you choose, hosted by Eric Burns. You got to make it fun. If you're really going to do it, you have to capitalize it and you got to go balls to the walls. Because when you think about it, the NFL does that with the NFL draft. that's essentially what it is. It's a production.
Right.
It's a big thing, even though it's kind of a stupid thing, but it's a big thing and people turn it on.
It's interesting because, you know, it's funny, like analytically, I think it's stupid too. I do think it's stupid, but there's this part of like, with the way analytics going, well, you know, like if of all the teams that you didn't want to face in the playoffs last year, the Washington Nationals were probably the one. Who wants to go up against three aces? Nobody does. But you're right. It's stupid. We shouldn't do it. One of the things I wanted to kind of close out with you is this nature of fandom. And you've talked about this a lot where we don't let casual fans. What is it about how ugly fans of this game seem to get to each other over things that don't affect them? And I'm thinking about like all the people I've muted on Twitter for the last 3 days because all of a sudden they love Joe Kelly because of, I just don't get it. Why can't we just enjoy the fact? Why can't we just enjoy our team and leave other people alone?
Because it's all about ownership. I think people feel like, and I feel the same sense of ownership, but I do my best to express it differently. When you have like look at all stuff behind me and look at everything behind you, we feel some sort of emotional attachment. Like, these aren't the Yankees. These are my Yankees. That's not the Astros. Those are your Astros. So you feel like after years and years of giving them your money and half my closet is jerseys. So it's like you wake up every day, you see them, and it's some sort of attachment. Like, no one else can have them but me, and it's possessive. And it becomes toxic when you find out the people doing it are a bunch of idiots. And that's really the problem is it half the time is – It's like watching Congress. It really is half the time. It's just people yelling and screaming nonsense. It's like if everyone just take a deep breath and realize none of this actually matters. It doesn't matter if you want Brett Gardner to start. That's a big thing that's going on in the Yankees fan base right now. So people saying we should be giving Clint Frazier. And Yankees Twitter can't even decide what they think of Clint Frazier because last year they absolutely hated him and he should have gotten traded. And now this year he's somehow this mystical magic savior who's never been given his shot. I don't get where that comes from. But people are just always arguing, and then when someone walks in like a casual fan who just wants to show up with their kids and their wife, and all they get is people yelling and screaming, or if you're at Yankee Stadium, people throwing bottles of soda at each other, do you think they're going to want to take their wife and kids there? Absolutely not. The idea is I even made a video about this. It has to function like an ecosystem. The role of the diehard fan is to raise the interest of the casual fan. And this cycle is going to keep continuing. So if I'm the diehard fan and then the casual fan comes in with their kid next to me, it'd be like, you start a conversation with them. And then you talk, and then all of a sudden their interest level's raised. They had a good time at the ballpark. Guess what? They'll turn the game on tomorrow night, and they'll come back later. All of a right. sudden, you're buying more merch. You're a diehard fan. They can then pay it forward. We don't do that. As soon as these people come in who don't immediately know everything, we almost put up like this wall. We build the wall. And then
the best wall. Like,
And then they can't get by. And it's like, no, you don't belong here. You don't belong here. This is for us diehards. Well, who's to decide how much you like a team or not? And this one drives me. I had to vent about this last one. Everybody, Yankees Twitter, look at me. Ready? It doesn't matter if you have a name on the back of your jersey that you bought. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It also doesn't matter how much money you spent on your jersey. Why? Because that stuff's expensive. Not everyone can afford a $200 jersey. Who cares?
Preach.
Who cares?
Preach.
Who it's cares? So
I have this, and you know this. You and I have talked enough, but for the fans out there, I during the season hate Astros Twitter. I hate them. And then, you know, January happened, and I was like, okay, you know what? Now we're together. And then last night, why don't you bunt guy? And all of a sudden, why am I watching this shit guy comes up? And now I hate Astros Twitter again. Nice. Breathe. The world sucks. This is your job to not let it suck a little bit for 3 hours. And look, that game, the Astros lost and it sucked, but that was an entertaining baseball game for all 13 innings. Stop.
I missed almost all of it. I'm so mad because the team I coached, they had a doubleheader. So I put the Yankees game on my phone in the dugout and I was watching it in between innings. And I missed, I caught like the last like two innings of the game last night. I watched the whole night before. And then of course now Yankee fans like Joe Kelly for some reason. What? And then there was a poll that went out that a lot of people went into this. I know we're going over time, but this just kills me. But they said, who's worse, Red Sox fans or Astros fans? And it's an overwhelming Astros fans are worse. What the hell has gotten into all of you Yankee fans that you are somehow sticking up for the Boston Red Sox? I do not understand this. Is it recency bias just because the Astros hurt you sooner or more recent that now you hate them more instead of the years and years of fire, hell-burning hatred for Boston? Now you just forgive all that? And now Joe Kelly's the good guy? What?
We're going to start bringing you on for your rants. Where can everybody find you guys? You guys have audiences out there. Like, y'all's music of baseball thing was awesome. Where can we find you guys?
Oh, thank you very much. You can find us at Twitter at B4. We just changed the thing, B4 Yankees _ Mets, or reverse, B4 Mets _. If you search B4 the pitch, you'll find it.
We'll find us.
Yeah, you can also find us on YouTube. We cover Yankees Talk Daily and Mets Talk, even though Billy doesn't get to come on here as often as he does. Billy's a very smart dude, especially about the New York Mets, and he loves the New York Mets. We're really trying to ramp up our Mets content that we're really putting out. So if you're a Mets fan, you're interested in the Mets, you definitely got to check us out. We got a bunch of stuff coming your way and a few videos coming out within the next few weeks that we're going to pump out. They're going to be a little bit different, a little bit new, but we really hope everyone's going
to
like them.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay. Good luck to your Yankees. Good luck to your Mets.
Yeah. Good luck to your Astros. Yeah. Okay. I'll say that. Yeah.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So that does wrap us up. I want to thank everybody who was on the show this week. I want to thank everybody who still watches or listens to the show. I think it's always interesting that some episodes have more views on YouTube, some episodes have more downloads on the podcast. Hopefully we're delivering a product that works in either format. And I am going to make a promise, and it's a promise that I've made before on the show, and I'm going to make it again, mostly because I think the health of my marriage depends on it, but I'm done. I'm done talking about the Astros sign stealing. I'm not going to tell Astros fans anymore that, you know what, they broke a serious rule and the punishment they got was the maximum allowable punishment and they deserved it. I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm not going to explain to people that the only reason you know about any of it is in fact because they got immunity, and that's how immunity works. And if they had been promised immunity and then not given immunity, we probably would have a work stoppage because the union would have freaked out. I'm not going to mention that anymore because y'all are smart to figure it out. I'm also not going to mention that even though they broke a rule, it actually, there's so much compelling evidence from neutral people, including the Los Angeles Times, that it was a relatively ineffective scandal. And while that doesn't change the outcome of them cheating and getting the maximum punishment, it does prove that it actually didn't affect the World Series. And therefore, that title's legitimate. I'm not going to say those things anymore. I'm going to let all that evidence stand on its own. We have a great episode for you next week. We're going to be talking to the Portland Pickles, the O'Fallon Hoots, an interview that I have been so excited for that we finally figured out. Spence, who's a big Yankee fan and does his Yankee hat of the day, super nice guy, is going to be on the show, and it's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. We're going to be, Jessica will be back on to talk about her experience at the Constellation Energy League. We're going to have a playoff for the Texas Collegiate League set by the time next episode happens, so much baseball to shake a stick at. I would say let's play two, but not if there's seven innings in a major league game, Jessica Mendoza. But what I will say is, until next time, let's get two.